Greetings, Sleepy Salsa here on this Wednesday, September 5th of 2012, and welcome to the 58th episode of the Last Bastille Podcast. This broadcast is kindly hosted over at radioforall.net. I should also take this opportunity to mention that the opening theme is Ashley Alicizes a Puzzling Predicament, and the outro will be Bosa's King's Quest, both of them available pursuant to Creative Commons Attribution, specifically CC BY NCSA 3.0 unported. For more information on Creative Commons, visit them at creativecommons.org. For any other content that may not be of original authorship by yours truly, any such material is used under the sincere intention of fair use. If you wish to understand the nature of the situation we are all suffering under and what can be done about it, feel free to visit the Last Bastille blog, which is located over at The Last Bastille, Bastille is spelled B-A-S-T-I-L-L-E, thelastbastille.wordpress.com. And tonight we'll be looking at another of those essential concepts, those fundamental bare-bones basics of what must be understood if humanity is to ever reassert self-determination. In other words, we'll be looking at another aspect of the control grid. And tonight, I'll be reading to you an article that was originally posted at the blog on July 7th of 2012, and it is entitled Incrementalization. When mass changes occur quickly, they are easily observable. Slower alterations, especially those that happen over several generations, are misinterpreted as natural evolutions. Time itself is used by the establishment as a mechanism of control, especially when traditions are broken and grassroots institutional memory becomes discontinuous. A common example used to illustrate incrementalization is the metaphor of the boiling frog, which is used to explain the notion of creeping normalcy. Another way of presenting this concept is with the slippery slope argument, which unfortunately can suffer as an informal fallacy if any link in the chain of asserted causations is not empirically proven. The core idea of incrementalization is that the establishment gradually becomes more tyrannical over succeeding generations, all the while breaking down family units, as well as the stability of long-term relationships, both platonic and romantic, so that any resistance will be diffused and thus rendered ineffectual since it experiences stunted growth before prematurely expiring. This repeatedly happens in cycles, the rise and fall of pseudo-revolutions, so to speak. Sociopolitical engineering is an essential incrementalization technique. Through the coercive power of government, special interests can force innocent people to either comply with their threats or suffer punishment through enforcement, taxation, regulation of free market companies while granting privileges to corporations, so-called social child welfare workers, public school indoctrination, and welfare dependency are all examples of how the state, through codified threats of violence that the mainline public erroneously thinks of as the law, significantly alters human behavior to the point where such manipulations, given enough time, are taken as a given. Baby boomers are the consequence of the massive growth of statism, as evidenced by the conclusion of the Second World War, the establishment of the United Nations, and the emergence of globalization. Generation X sanctioned big government, combining the vices of both the warfare and the welfare state. Generation Y is composed of anti-status of various flavors, but their attempts to remedy our overall situation suffer from devastating ineffectiveness due to both the generational gap and their lack of understanding of history, since to them, tyranny is normal. Even political dissidents are not totally immune from the effects of incrementalization. Most dissidents suffer from the common problem of having such a specific, encapsulated focus that they become narrow-minded and neglect the big picture. Consider both the single-issue activists who inadvertently cause division amongst themselves, as well as the various dissident factions who all bitch-slap each other pretty regularly. Overcoming this requires dissidents to cross the proverbial point of no return by entering into a state of nature. Until such time this happens, dissident activity will be about as effective as pissing in the wind. for each new influx of eager activists has demonstratively slid any sort of real advancement for the cause of liberty backwards. Typically by advocating for methods that necessarily entail working within the system, such as by voting or writing your Congress critter. The state really hates stable long-term relationships, regardless of whether that is expressed in terms of platonic friendships, romantic couples, or entire familial units. What the special interests and their puppet governments absolutely can't stand are, for lack of a better sounding term, tribes of humans with a molecular level bond of trust. Tribes who possess bonds of genuine loyalty will protectively surround one of their own individual members who happens to be singled out for persecution by the state. Such behavior testifies to the willingness of people to overtly resist the government. Documenting the misdeeds of government over several generations is required if the slippery slope is to be a cogent argument instead of a logical fallacy. The next step is to present the empirical evidence to the mass population, but especially to one's own family and friends. The results will demonstrate who is predisposed towards resisting tyrants, and who would prefer instead to serve as pro bono government apologists. Nothing less than this will indicate the mentalities of the people towards the establishment. And again, that is my article on incrementalization. And now, hopefully, at least this time, a brief postscript. You know, it's quite interesting to look at a lot of areas of the alternative media, as well as the carnival of distractions within it. And to their credit, there is and this is one of the things they actually do correctly, thankfully, which is documenting all the slow little moves. You know, David Icke has a term for incrementalization. He calls it the totalitarian tiptoe. But again, whether you call a creeping normalcy, the boiling frog parable, incrementalization, which is the technical term, or totalitarian tiptoe, these are all different terms for describing the exact same phenomenon. That is slow changes that occur over a long period of time, but that are bad, and usually are bad for people, or at least they instigate a cost against usually most of the populace for the benefit of the despotic few, if you will. And this is, you know, easily demonstrated. I mean, you can use some things like never-ending inflation with, you know, Hershey candy bars or what have you. But you can also look at the sphere of allowed human activity. That is their mala prohibita, which I will treat in a later episode. But literally, I mean, what is considered illegal? I mean, what is the government willing to punish you over if you perform any of these actions? I mean, there are literally hundreds of thousands of pages just in your local and state, local areas, and at the state level, which is kind of a joke. I mean, states don't have sovereignty anymore. They should be called provinces, like up in Canada, because it's not really a federal government. It's more like a central government in the District of Criminals. But look at your local and, shall I dare say, provincial level statutes. And look at everything that they are willing to use against you. And a lot of this stuff wasn't there 30 years ago. More was added 20 years ago. The last 10 years, of course, have been very exciting for obvious reasons, considering how the last decade started out, for the most part. And so what we've noticed is this ever-expanding, it's a zero-sum game. Because on one side of it, you have the ever-expanding role of the government at any scale or scope. Its power is constantly expanding. And then on the voluntary or non-government side, the remnants of the free market, if you will, ever-contracting allowed behavior. And then people wonder why things like agorism spring up. of course, you know, underground economies and counter economies or whatever the hell you want to call it, of course, and, you know, black and gray markets, as the agorists would call it, of course these things are going to spring up. What do you expect? It is the inevitable consequence of the irresponsible actions of those who happen to wield the initiation of aggressive coercion, of the initiation of violence against you and your family personally. I mean, that is what we're dealing with. I mean, this isn't, some sort of, social contract, voluntarily agreed to thing. I would be very surprised if it did turn out to be that, because if it is, it sucks. And the proprietarian anarchist would be proven right. Because what it would mean is that you can't have any form of the Night Watchman state, a republic or otherwise. Or, as I think, a lot of what they've mentioned, while well-intentioned, is in a lot of ways wrong. That you can have consent to the governed and true representation. But this is the great question of our time. Is it possible to have limited government? Is it? Because the problem is that you can notice with the republic, you've had the smallest government. I mean, the whole point of the federal constitution and the state level constitutions too, but let's use the federal one since that's what everybody's familiar with. The whole point of the federal constitution was to serve as a chain around the neck of the state, capital S state, as in the polity. It was a chain around the government. That was kind of the whole point. Or at least that's what we've been led to believe. And obviously I'll save, examination of the Constitution itself for another time, but, I mean, that's what we've all been told, right? I mean, it's supposed to provide for our liberties and, you know, rights or freedoms and all that jazz, right? I mean, that's what we've been told. And it's coming to a head, because the problem is that you fast forward from the early republic to now, and it is an empire. I mean, let's call it what it is. I mean, the nicest way of putting it is that it's the republic turned empire, and it's a republican in name only. Or perhaps maybe even in its structure, but it doesn't act like it. I mean, it might as well be like Athenian democracy or worse. I mean, that is one aspect of the nature of the situation we're all suffering under, is literally what was supposed to be this, you know, these guards for our future security suddenly becoming, rendering us under absolute despotism. I mean, that is what happened. And of course, the big proprietarian anarchist claim is that the smallest governments always turn into the largest. And if they're right, the implications of that are beyond staggering. If they're wrong, well, then a completely different answer is possible. Regardless, what can be proven is that the republic has turned into an empire. This particular one, as of 1780 whatever to 2012, undeniably that is what happened. If you're going to use America as the great experiment, and as a side note, Soviet Russia was referred to as the second great experiment, so make of that as you will. The republic has become an empire. So if you want an example of incrementalization, holy cow, that's a look what happened. I mean, there were lots of small changes, but, you know, depending which benchmark you use, if you want to use the War for Southern Independence, look at the Civil War amendments. Or, yeah, there was nothing civil about that war, obviously. But look at those amendments that came out, 13th, 14th, and 15th. And look how, especially the 14th, about how that's been used to justify so many bad things on top of it. Or heck, even if you think 14th Amendment is great and all that, and you know you don't give a shit what happened to the South, fine. Fast forward to 1913. I don't even think the Yanks would like the bankers too much. The South sure as hell don't. So, I mean, whichever benchmark you're using, it doesn't really matter all that much. Because you can still prove creeping normalcy. I mean, most of this has been documented and is publicly available. It's just not that well known. You just go up to ask anybody on the side of the street, and it's like, no, this tyranny is normal. I mean, having the standing army is normal. Having a fractionally reserved fiat receipt funding money is normal. And not only normal, but it's desirable, too. Even at the expense of having normal human relations. You know, in that movie, They Live, or whatever it was called, the guy with the glasses who saw the aliens or whatever, he could see the subliminal that once, especially in that one infamous scene, he could see the subliminal messages, the predictive programming in you, if you will, if referring to an earlier episode. He could literally see the messages directly. So you see a woman on a beach with, you know, she's in a bikini, she's quite attractive, and the subliminal message is, you know, marry and reproduce. And other things say buy and consume and all this when looking at certain signs. Well, interestingly enough, when he looked down at one point, saw somebody holding Federal Reserve notes, but the message was, this is your God. I mean, think about that. You look at the Federal Reserve notes, and the subliminal and the implied message is that this is your God. Everything revolves around, or at least that's what they claim it should be. And so when I mention in the article about how government inherently wants people to not trust each other. And again, whether you're looking at it on an individual basis, like on a one-on-one basis, you know, romantic, platonic, whatever, you're looking at a more family basis or what have you, or even like ad hoc families. It doesn't matter which form it is, or versions on a theme of it. I mean, when I say family, I'm not talking about mommy, daddy, and three, you know, and two brat children, nuclear family. I mean any form of the family. Because really at this point, not just at this point, but just look through history. I mean, there have been various different forms of, you know, different types of family units. The point is that when you have people who actually are tied together, whether it's by, you know, blood, kin, marriage, long-standing history, if it's going to be between like really, really good friends or something like that, good close friends, genuine friends, then of course they're going to stick up for each other if somebody gets persecuted. You know, of course, you know, if somebody's car breaks down at 3 a.m., they're going to wake up if you call them and come help you. And it's interesting because a lot of actual civilizations and actual cultures were built from lots of those different tribes, if you will. And unfortunately, some of the proprietarian anarchists really don't. They misuse the term tribe, and I don't want to get into verbicide here, but the point is you need to be able to trust people. I mean, personal relationships are where it's at. At least the anarchists got that right. Personal relationship, but it's not just, you know, personal relationships just to make your life better. No, even in a political sense, this is the one thing they keep missing. Even in a political sense, personal relationships are pivotal because regardless of whether things get worse or not, that's not even your fallback position so much, although it is. It's your foundation for everything that happens after that. Think about it. If you're living in an area that has gone really despotic and you can't own guns and they're screwing with your kids or whatever the problem, or, you know, putting, you know, shit in the water, whatever the problems are, think about it. There's always the notion of voting with your feet. Well, obviously you don't want to just flippantly make a decision like that because that's a major life decision. But if you had good, strong family ties and they can help you move, you know, it's a lot easier for someone with a family to actually move out of a tyrannical type situation than someone who's just on, you know, all alone in a state, especially if they're in a state of nature, with their ass swinging out in the wind. I mean, you look back in history, you look at like the friendly societies. I mean, those are like mutual support networks. And as much as it grinds my gears in a different way, look at some religious faiths. I would suggest, especially this one, would be the Mormons. To their credit, the one good thing I will say about them is that they were able to have a system of private charity, and their family units tend to be pretty good for the most part. Without getting too deeply into them, which is not the point of this particular episode, the point is that a lot of them actually genuinely have good, strong family units. So in a lot of ways, the Mormons are some of the kinds of like archetypal type family units with which would be most likely to resist the government. But it's not because they're Mormon, it's because it's individuals with good, strong personal relationships that will rely on each other. I mean, that's just it. And we all need to do this. I mean, especially people who are secular, especially because usually religion, a common religion, binds people both negatively and positively. Of course, if you don't have a common religion, that can have its good aspects and its bad aspects. But one of the negative aspects is that now you've lost a common bond. So unless you form a different bond based on something else, you don't, whether it's a philosophy or a worldview or just, you know, common hobbies, I don't know, then you're kind of shit out of luck in a lot of ways. Notice the gradual creeping in of breaking up families. Notice various other things that the establishment does. I know I've been kind of harping on this one aspect, but just keep in mind that, I mean, just keep in mind that there are signposts. And if you live long enough, you'll actually start noticing the creeping normalcy even more because you've lived long enough to see it happen. Now, of course, the catch-22 is you don't want to live so long enough that, you know, you die or otherwise you're too old to actually do something about it in a more, shall we say, exciting way. The point, though, is that other people who have come before me can testify to this. There is actually history for this, very much so, and it doesn't matter what the subject area. I mean, the police state is a good example, too. You know, it was back in the 70s when there was that show called SWAT or whatever. That was before they actually had the full stormtrooper outfits. I mean, they were just wearing, you know, long sleeve blue black shirts and baseball hats. They would be running around with ARs and similar types of things, but they weren't like fully armored like how they are now, with the goggles and the, you know, helmets modeled after the Third Reich and that kind of stuff. That didn't happen yet. I mean, that happened later. And now I remember seeing a Colin Firth movie or something? I think it was like with Samuel Jackson or some such thing. But basically it was about a SWAT unit. It was all about SWAT unit. And there it's the modern, you know, they're fully kitted up like they're going to war. In some ways, they're actually better armored than, you know, some military units I've seen. And that's just it. That's the big joke. I mean, the New World Order isn't coming. It's here. Or whatever the hell you want to call it. Because it's been gradually, and in a lot of ways, it's not all that new. It's happening very, very slowly. I mean, I remember when my parents told me stuff that was happening during the 90s. And now I've seen the full fruition of it. And now it's getting... It's not just so much that it's accelerating, although that is the case too. It's also that it's going, and they're ratcheting it up. And if you think the secret police were bad in the 80s, holy crap, you fast forward to now, it's like they're on steroids. And unfortunately, there aren't enough good people working effectively enough to stop this. You know, they'd rather... This is why I harp so much about the Carnival of Distractions. Because it's prohibiting people from seeing this. Also, one other thing about incrementalization, it can also work in another way too. For example, notice how almost nobody in the alternative media, almost nobody, is mentioning anything about committees of safety. So in that kind of way, anything that actually can be useful and constructive will be ignored out of existence, but it's done slowly over time. It's a combination of the establishment doing it on their end by keep taking it out of the history textbooks, but also on the dissident side of it, when most of the dissidents, you know, don't do their research or they obsess for years and years and years on the same like 5 or 10 old topics that they've covered ad nauseum, ad infinitum. I mean, like, to the point of nausea and beyond. Like, if you don't know that fluoridated water is bad for you, you're either ignorant or a moron. And ignorance can't be cured, but only an individual can deal with their own ineptness. And that's where we are right now. It's a snake-eating-its-own-tail problem, and then You know, I remember, you know, there was actually a newer guy who asked me recently, why has nothing moved forward? And I told him why. It's a combination of factors, but one of those big things is that, you know, it's a proverbial rumor mill. That's the carnival that's stopping a lot of this. And they're getting you distracted with other things, which I'll tackle in a future episode, that does not help you secure your liberties. In fact, it actually does the opposite. It puts you in a state of fear. And they do and this is also related to the subject, so don't worry. They do this, the Patriot rock stars do this, where they tell you about all the horrible shit the government's doing and other despotic entities that are tied in with the government, like corporations or international NGOs or whatever, the IGOs. They tell you about all this stuff, but then they never tell you, like, let's try and get around it. Or when they do, it's always this stuff about working within the system, peaceful solutions. It's this kind of nonsense that actually has proven itself to not work. Not only not work, but incrementally has proven itself not to work over and over and over again. Petitioning and voting and all these other things. I mean, it's proven. It's not up for debate anymore. And then, you know, one of these, I'm just calling it what it is, it's a useful idiot, will completely ignore the evidence, act completely irrational, and then just say, oh, you have to have faith in the people, or some stupid platitude. They try to sound like an establishment politician. Like, no, this is, you know, there's bad facts and evidence. If you have a problem with the facts and the evidence, then, you know, now's the time to bring it up. You know, before the bullets start flying, now's the time to bring it up. And interestingly enough, every single time somebody's been challenged on good faith to challenge the evidence, it just there's nothing to bring. It's all hype. At the same time, they'll act as if the tyranny that we're going through is somehow new. You know, I've noticed this with the Tea Party refugees, and now considering the events of the recent 2012 GOP convention, which was a crock, and it always is, just like the DNC one. It's all left-right paradigm nonsense. You know, they act as if, oh, all this horrible, you know, police state stuff, it's all Obama's fault. It's like, no, because you don't know the history. You know, go back to Bush, go before that to, I mean, you can trace this stuff to Reagan and before. Reagan is a bad man. Limited government conservative, and the federal government tripled in size under his two terms, 8 years, and it tripled? I mean, either the guy's evil or he's incompetent, but he's not helping any. None of these guys are. And it's not limited to the presidency either. I mean, the Congress refuses to declare war constantly. They're constantly, you know, giving a blank check to the Federal Reserve for whatever they want to do, historically over time. I mean, they just keep doing this over and over again. This isn't just something new as of 2009, which is a few years ago. This isn't something new as of 2001, where you have the Nouveau Patriots and those kind of folks who whine and bitch about 9/11 but don't have any actual solutions for dealing with it, or its aftermath or whatever. And, of course, the real way you deal with it is you deal with the police state. You know, this isn't something new because of Waco, which was 93. I mean, this is stuff going really far back. I mean, you could also, I mean, if you want a different benchmark, you could say the progressives, you know, 1930s era with FDR, and they're not progressives, they're socialists, they're commies, basically. I mean, that's what bankers are, they're commies. They fund the communists, the Wall Street bankers funded the Bolshevik Revolution. They constantly do this. And then I find it humorous that, as of a few years ago, the Occupy Wall Street people, some of them claim to be communists, but they don't like the banks. See, that's where controlled opposition comes into play, but I'll save that for a future episode. I mean, this is just so amazing to me. The point, though, is that they don't know their own history. Even contemporary history, like as of the past 30 years, 20 years, hell, even the past 10 years. Hell, just if you want to use 9/11 as the benchmark, they don't even know the stuff that was happening in 2002 and 2003 other than Iraq and Afghanistan. That's it. I mean, this is really bad. And then each time you have a new influx, like I mentioned, each time you have a new influx, that reduces the overall drive for everybody to actually try and do something effective. even if it's a peaceful solution, but something that actually could work better or otherwise. It doesn't matter. It's like each new influx drags everyone else who is active before. It's really pernicious. It's really, really awful. But again, incrementally, this is what's happened. I'm not asking any of you to believe me based on faith. That is the last thing I would want anybody to do. I'm just saying this is the results. This is the most encapsulated, shortest way I can explain it. And if you want to double check it later, fine, be my guest. But, you know, this is it. This is, you know, you want to know the nature of the situation we're all suffering under, this is another aspect of it. The dissidents themselves don't even know where their predecessors were doing beforehand. So a lot of times you'll see the same stuff that doesn't work crop up again because there is it kind of like what happens with the like baby boomers, Generation X and Generation Y and other types of examples. Because there is a kind of generational gap or a gap of sorts between different waves of dissidents, there's also a break. There's no institutional memory. So this happens on the dissident side too. This isn't just with the mainline public. That's the part that where it gets really creepy. Next episode, we will continue seeing through the fog of illusion by exploring another essential concept, that of balkanization. I am Sleepy Salsa, and thanks for listening.